So we're now here, we now have our first interview for the program now. We're very happy to be joined today by Isaac Nellis. Isaac is a member of Socialist Alliance and a regular writer for Green Left. And Isaac has recently written an article commenting on the rise of One Nation, but also analysing how, you know, the kind of policies of the Labor government has very much paved the way for One Nation's rise and support. I think for a lot of our listeners, you're probably aware that recent polls in the news have actually shown that One Nation's support has actually increased from like 10 to 12 to 15 kind of percent. And this has also probably been the context in which former Nationals leader Barnaby Joyce has actually made the decision to jump ship to One Nation, probably suspecting, given the kind of disarray of the Liberal Party, that he actually stands a chance of, you know, gaining, potentially being able to gain a seat. And he is going to be slated to run as a New South Wales Senate candidate when the next election kind of rolls around. We'll go unpack some of this with Isaac. So good morning, Isaac.
Good morning, Jacob. Good morning, Chloe and Steph and 3CR listeners.
Hey, comrade.
Hello.
So, Isaac, I guess I want to kind of start off. So I just mentioned the kind of surge in support for One Nation. And I guess, what do you think are some of the kind of reasons for this?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty scary, right? Like, this is their highest level of support in something like 27 years. Back when they were first kind of starting off in the late 90s. So it is worth interrogating why this is happening. I think the most kind of obvious and probably a big chunk of what the growth in support is the disgruntled kind of coalition voters who are looking for somewhere to be after what's been a pretty disastrous kind of federal election result and subsequent kind of year for particularly the Liberal Party, who are kind of unable to present a feasible kind of alternative to Labor. And there's been long-standing kind of divides within the Liberals, where there's the more kind of right-wing versus far-right kind of factions. So I think that kind of layer is probably reflected in Barnaby Joyce jumping from Nationals to One Nation, where they want to actually have a more strongly kind of cohered kind of far-right party. And the other layer is probably the far right kind of consolidating around One Nation. So, you know, every election there's always a whole bag full of far right micro parties that contest on various racist or homophobic or whatever platforms they have. So, you know, we've had Trumpet of Patriots last election. There's been United Australia Party, Family First, etc. So I think part of this represents some of those smaller groups kind of electing to kind of, or the voters for those smaller parties electing to kind of gather around One Nation as a kind of figurehead for that the movement. And I think this is partly inspired by the far right success in Europe and the United States, where they've been able to kind of gain some momentum electorally as well. And I think the other element is that there is this level of frustration with the capitalist system and the kind of status quo of rich getting richer, poor getting poorer. People are really feeling pain of housing crisis and the cost of living. And I think the far right has been quite successful in capturing, some of that feeling and directing it towards, their agenda. And as you mentioned, that's been driven by the role of Labor in government, who are pretty much killing off hope for real change, and they're continuing the program that they started in their first term in power of lowering expectations and ruling, on behalf of the capitalist class and the rich. So I think all those factors combined have given One Nation a big boost in the polls that we've seen.
So I want to kind of hear a bit of comments from you, Isaac, on the Labor government's second term, and very much, have they kind of delivered it all for working people?
Well, a short answer, no. But, they won this huge majority in the last federal election. They were celebrating all around the country. People were thinking, you know, what are they going to do with this kind of position? But they haven't actually, they've refused to actually use that position to deliver any, you know, serious reforms on the big social issues. So the things that they have introduced have mainly been kind of tinkering around the edges of issues, or, you know, these kind of big name ideas like the social media ban that just went into place for under-16s, that, you know, that they're this kind of big idea that doesn't actually address any of the kind of key issues. So another example is the housing policy that they've released is actually just making housing more expensive and putting first home buyers into more debt. The environment law changes that passed a week or two ago, you know, that the Greens were able to improve them very slightly, but, you know, at the end of the day, they failed to address the elephant in the room, which is the fossil fuel-driven climate change. And then, you know, they're pushing ahead with things like the AUKUS military alliance with the US, which is costing more than $400 billion, which is a pretty unimaginable amount of money, and actually requires shifting a whole bunch of our kind of economy and workforce towards propping up militarism. And that's instead of addressing the real emergency, which is climate change. And then, you know, they're still handing out $15 billion in subsidies to fossil fuel companies. It's still sending weapons to Israel that commits to genocide in Gaza. And I think the other important issue is the way that Labor kind of keeps workers and the union movement on a leash and stops it from taking meaningful action to protect workers' rights or increase wages and working conditions, etc. And that attack on the CFMEU is pretty outrageous, and it's defanged one of the few unions that were willing to take action. So I think this is a huge part of why billionaires have been able to keep ripping workers off, not giving us wage rises, and because of people feeling this pain is why they're looking for alternatives. And some of those people are looking, you know, to the far right and to One Nation. And I think it's no surprise that people are pissed off with this Labor government.
All right. So the next kind of question is, one of the kind of things that One Nation has really been able to tap into is this kind of argument that's getting increasingly popularized, that when it comes to the housing crisis, immigration is the cause. And why does the left need to kind of reject these arguments, and why, and what are the arguments that we need to be making to reject this narrative?
Yeah, it's been the huge argument pushed by the far right around the world, that we've seen that immigrants are basically to blame for the housing crisis or for, you know, healthcare shortages, et cetera, et cetera, you name it. I think the first reason to oppose these arguments is because they're not true, and they're basically a big lie, a big scam to trick working people. But if you look at the housing construction versus immigration rates in the past 10 years, there's been more homes built than immigrants arriving. Actually, an interesting stat is that population growth in Australia is at its lowest since the Great Depression in the 1930s. So the fact that of population growth, it should be the main driver of shortage of house prices, but it's very low, and house building is outpacing it. But there's been a historic trend of anti-immigration fears kind of rising when there's periods of economic recession or rising unemployment. So I think that's tied in with that, where that's coming from. And it's interesting as well, we actually have a shortage of skilled workers, particularly in construction. So we need more immigrants to build more homes. It is part of the kind of economic narrative as well. But yeah, I guess it's immigrants are a useful scapegoat for you know, the media, the right-wing politicians to blame, so that the real cause of the housing crisis is examined, which is that housing has become one of the most surefire ways to get a return on your investment. So there's these investors and mega landlords investing huge amounts of money in the property market and, you know, leveraging the investor-friendly kind of negative gearing and capital gains tax exemptions and drawing out huge profits. And this is from something that should be, you know, a human right, a basic that everyone should have access to is being used as a massive rort for you know, the rich to make more and more money. And that includes leaving some of these properties empty so that they can continue to make money from them while they're just sitting kind of sitting empty. And that's why there's so many empty properties in a lot of the major cities. It also distracts from lack of public housing. We used to build about 20% of all new housing used to be public housing, and now it's down to a tiny percentage. So a lot of the new housing that is being built is, you know, aimed at richer people, these fancy multi-million-dollar apartments, etc. So that means there's less, you know, homes available that people can actually afford. And it's part of the tricky part of it is that Labor doesn't actually want to reduce house prices because there's about 12 million people who own property, and they've been told for decades that this is the surefire way to ensure that you have a comfortable retirement. You know, this should carry you out, and you can pass this on to your children, etc. So a lot of people who don't want house prices to fall because they've spent their whole working lives investing in it. So for Labor and government, it's easier for them to go along with this idea that immigrants are to blame than it is for them to actually address the root causes of the housing crisis. And so that's one reason, I guess. And then the other reason is because we have to oppose the racism and prejudice that is built into the blaming of immigrants as well. And I think, you know, this country's got a history of being built on genocide of First Nations people. You know, and that's continuing to this day. I just heard you were talking about this, the deputy custody stats before this. And then, you know, the White Australia policy, which the kind of latest expression of that being the bipartisan Stop the Boats campaign, which demonised refugees. So this kind of racism that's been embedded in society over decades and centuries, this kind of outburst against immigration is part of that. Something we have to challenge.
All right. So thanks for that response, Isaac. I mean, I think it is very kind of important, you know, that we actually raise these kind of arguments because, I mean, I think it's very important to point out that, you know, essentially both the Liberal Party and the Labor Party have actually normalised this argument, this right-wing argument that's very much been pushed by the far right, that mass immigration is the cause of the housing crisis. And I think, yeah, it's also been a very big trend in all parts of a lot of parts of Western Europe and in the United States. Now, the kind of final kind of question I want to sort of ask you and is what are the kind of socialist solutions that are kind of needed to challenge One Nation and the major parties?
Well, yeah, I think socialists are actually in a pretty good position to be well equipped to challenge One Nation and far right fear-mongering and hate because, you know, we can actually point to and explain the source of the pain and the crushing of people's dreams. We can say, you know, it's not immigrants, it's not renewable energy, it's not, you know, First Nations people, but it's actually the billionaires, the super rich and the capitalist system that serves them. So instead of just tinkering around the edges in the way that Labor does, they can actually point to a root cause and explain why people are feeling the way they're feeling. So the far right kind of prey on social isolation, economic insecurity and people feeling powerless and left behind by politics. They manipulate these kind of the genuine distress that people feel to drive their racist agenda. So if we actually address some of these issues, help people fight for, you know, economic security, help give people a voice and a say in politics and in how the world works in their day-to-day lives, that can kind of take the oxygen away from, you know, the Pauline Hansons of the world. So socialists can provide these concrete solutions that, you know, point to people's everyday concerns, but then also point to the longer-term system change that's also needed. Now, you know, there is a lot to be angry about because we do live in a system that rips off working people to profit a tiny few who control our economy. So socialists can, you know, harness that frustration and anger that people are feeling and direct it towards the the real villains, you know, the billionaires and their, you know, servants in Parliament, Labour and the Coalition, rather than it being directed against, you know, immigrants, minorities, the poor. It's hard for Labour or, you know, it's hard for Labour to challenge the far right because they don't want to challenge capitalism, so they don't have anywhere to go. They can't kind of explain. There's no kind of option for them there, whereas socialists can. Not to say it's an easy thing to do. I mean, it's going to be a challenge to address this rise of the far right, and it's been seen around the world. I think a starting point is to link up the struggles for workers' rights with movements against racism, against war, and for justice for First Nations people. I think socialist solutions, you know, redistributing wealth, ensuring decent living standards for all, are actually gaining momentum around the world. So we've seen that with Zoran Mamdani in New York, Catherine Connolly in Ireland. There's plenty of other examples where, you know, there's these countercurrents that are forming to the kind of general rightward kind of shift that we've seen. And I guess the other element is to challenge the far right. You know, as you said before, the far right kind of put out these ideas that are then normalized by the major parties. So the role of the socialists and the left can be to challenge that and to try and shift politics towards the left as well, in a general sense. So there's plenty that there's an important role for socialists to play in kind of stopping people from getting caught up in the far-right kind of manipulation and providing genuine solutions that actually get us out of the crisis that we're in.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Isaac, for being on our program. And I think, this has been a very good interview, kind of highlighting an important kind of left-wing kind of response to the rise of One Nation. Thanks again, Isaac, for being on our program. And, just want to encourage listeners to have a look at Isaac Nellis's article, How Labour is Paving the Way for One Nation, which is available to read on greenleft.org.au.
Thanks very much.